Hello, friend. I'm Cal, and welcome to episode 106 of the Intentional Leader Podcast. I am very grateful that you're joining me today. My conversation today is with Dr. Michael Norton about the power of rituals. Ever since reading his new book, The Ritual Effect, I've been thinking about rituals and the power they have in our lives and in our leadership. I've been seeing rituals all over my life, and I'm really excited about today's conversation. If you enjoy today's conversation, would you do me a big favor and go over to Apple Podcast or Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts, and leave this show a rating or review? That really helps me continue to get incredible guests like Dr. Norton. I also really enjoy reading those reviews. It's a great way for me to get feedback. So I would really appreciate it if you do that. And if you're watching on YouTube, let me know what rituals you have in your life. Do you have performance rituals? Do you have relationship rituals? Things you do at big events, holidays? As we're having this conversation, drop a comment on YouTube. I'd love to hear what rituals you have. Now, Dr. Norton received his PhD in social psychology from Princeton, and he teaches at the Harvard Business School. He co-authored the book Happy Money with Elizabeth Dunn, and his TED Talk, How to Buy Happiness, has been viewed almost 5 million times. His new book, The Ritual Effect, is a really good read, one that I highly recommend. I think this has a lot of application for leaders. So without any further ado, please enjoy my conversation with Dr. Michael Norton. All right, Mike, I'm so excited to have you here on the podcast. Welcome.
Thanks, Cal. It's awesome to be here.
I was telling you off camera that since reading your book, Ritual Effect, I find myself seeing rituals everywhere. And it's both cool and distracting almost at the same time. I can't imagine what it's like to actually write a book on it.
I got to hear what all the ones you've been noticing are as we chat. But I would say my wife and daughter find it extremely annoying after a while that I'm constantly saying, there's one. And they're like, just give it a rest. Yeah.
Well done on the book. It's a topic that I had not explored. And I certainly had spent a lot of time on habits. And we'll talk about the difference between habits and rituals. And I'm just really want to riff on that for a little bit. But I'm curious, in the book, you talk about how you started out as a ritual skeptic. And then now you've written a book on the topic. Tell us how you originally got interested in this topic of rituals.
From the very beginning, it kind of hit me as it was this thing, as you said, where it felt like it was all around us. But I mainly was thinking at first of the word ritual itself. It kind of is like people in robes with candles chanting or something. You know, it's kind of an old word, something like that. So I wasn't interested really in that element of it. I was interested in the little ones that are happening every day, which we'll for sure chat about in our everyday lives. Like, couples have little rituals they do every day. Families have little things they do. People at work have little things they do with their teams. But I was studying it like a scientist, you know, from the outside. This stuff is a little bit, I don't know, all over the place. I'm not sure if it's really all that it's cut out to be. And then truthfully, what happened was that I had a daughter. And if you have ever had a child, or any of your listeners have had a child, you know that all of it, I mean, first off, your life changes like overnight in so many ways. Yeah. But one is just parents turn to rituals to try to solve some of the problems. And the biggest one is sleep. It is amazing how elaborate the pre-bedtime rituals can get for couples. Like, it really, or for parents, I should say, it really, really is extraordinary. And we did, you know, this stuffed animal, this book, this song has to be in this order. I have to be there. Then my wife has to be there. You know, you really get these really elaborate things going. And we were doing it and doing it and doing it. And no joke, maybe I was too tired, but it took me a while to realize I just completely started using rituals in my own life without even knowing it. I turned to them to try to solve this big problem we were having with sleep. Then, of course, you ask other parents. Everybody's got their own thing. It's everyone's completely different from everybody else, but we're all turning to it. And that was for me saying, wow, these things really are something that lots of us are doing, sometimes under the surface. Let's dive more into them.
Yeah. That part of the book, I totally relate to. I've got a 2-year-old who will not sleep through the night, at least. He'll sleep for a little while, and then he'll let us know when he wants something. So we're trying to figure out the right dialed in ritual to make that work. I'll have to follow up with you on what worked for you.
Do you have specific songs that you sing?
You know, maybe that's what we're missing. We did that with our daughter, and I think not to get too far into the parenting sleep difficulties, but we've just allowed him, like, at night he'll cry. We'll go in and I'll give him a bottle, or I'll just rock him for a little while, and we just need to stop that. And we know we do. And then what happens is, as soon as we plan to kind of wean him off of these things, he gets sick. And then we're like, oh, we don't want to do it because he's sick. You know, we want to make sure he has one. So anyway, when I read that part of the book, I was like, oh my goodness, that's I can 100% relate to that. And I think that's maybe the larger point that at the beginning of the book, you talk about just rituals do something for us, and they kind of do something to us. And I'm really excited to kind of get into the distinction between that and habits. But just one question before we jump in, just kind of high level, what do you most hope people get out of the book? Or what are you most excited for people when they read through this book? What do you think are going to be some of their biggest insights and takeaways?
I think there's two things. One is that you notice more what's already happening in your life in this way. You know, you notice more what you're doing with your kids or your spouse or, you know, your family at dinner or your family at the holidays, or you see things at work, you know, that you really kind of look down at yourself and say, oh my God, and it's kind of like you laugh at yourself. You're like, oh my God, I've been totally doing this the whole time. I wasn't even aware of it. That feeling, I think, is really valuable to have, because it kind of lets you own them a little bit more and really kind of cherish these things that we do. But then the other one is really to think about, are there areas in your life where you could experiment with a little more ritual? I don't mean ritual like put on a robe with candles and start chanting ritual. I mean these little thing, you know, with kids, it's the little book and the little song, these little changes and small behaviors that we make that sometimes can be really emotionally resonant, and playing with them and seeing if they work for you, something that I hope people try more of.
So I know a lot of listeners are very familiar with the work on habits that's been done by BJ Fogg and Charles Duhigg and James Clear. I'm curious, in your mind, does this build on some of that work? Is it separate from that work? Is it interconnected? When people are purchasing this book and thinking about where it fits, especially people that listen to this podcast who are really into leadership, personal growth, they probably spend a lot of time trying to dial in their habits. Where does this fit with some of that work that's already out there?
I think that they're closely linked in some domains of life, for sure. Sometimes it's hard to tell what's a habit and what's a ritual. Even people in their own lives, it's hard to tell. For me, habits tend to be kind of the thing itself, like the thing you're trying to get done, and you just need to get it done. So you're trying to eat healthy, so you eat healthy, or you're trying to get up early, so you set your alarm and you get up early. It's kind of, you're wanting to have good habits in order to have good habits. And rituals add emotion on top of that often. So you get up early and you do a specific morning thing. You know, you have your coffee first, then you talk to your spouse, then you take the dog out, then the kids, then the newspaper, you know, whatever it might, everyone has their own little order that they do. You need to do all those things, but sometimes you're doing them in a specific order at specific times. And if you do it in a different order, you kind of feel a little bit off. You don't really like doing it in a different order. And that's, again, not robes with candles, but that's getting more toward a ritual. You're not just doing those actions to get them done. You're doing them in a sequence that makes you feel something. Like people say, if I can do it the way I like to do it, I feel ready for the day. And that, I think, is in the very, very small level, that's a little bit of the difference between habits and ritual, is that rituals, even though the actions can be very simple, just like habits, they become imbued with more meaning and more emotion. And so they open us up for a different kind of experience.
Can you walk us through the litmus test of showering and brushing teeth?
This is one of the most fun. A fun thing about being a professor is, of course, you talk a lot to students or audiences, and they're trapped there. So you can ask them whatever you want. So I often ask people to raise their hand in the morning, or if you're getting ready for bed at night, do you shower first and then brush your teeth? Or do you brush your teeth first and then shower? Do you know which one you are?
I think, especially in the morning, I shower first and then I brush my, because I've been thinking about this since I've started, you know, listening to you and reading your book. I shower first and then brush my teeth. But I will tell you, Mike, this morning, knowing I was preparing for this interview, I brushed my teeth first and then got in the shower. And I tried to discern, like, does that bother me? And I will tell you, I don't think it really bothers me that much, but please continue. But that's that. Normally I shower first and then brush my teeth.
So it's funny, in audiences all over the place, it's about 50-50. Mm-hmm. So for some reason, half of humans have decided to shower first and then brush.
So interesting.
And the other half brush and then shower. Some people do them both at the same time, which is kind of a funny little quirk. But it's like we didn't agree on what order to do them, but everyone has their own order for sure.
Yeah. I'd never thought about it before. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think the question that gets at the habit ritual thing is, if you do them in a different order, how does it make you feel? Do you care at all? You say, no problem, I'll just do them in a different order. Or does something in you, even if you think about it right now for yourself, like I usually shower and then brush. What if I actually tomorrow brushed and then showered? About half of people, I think, are more like you, where they say, no problem, I can, you know, it's just stuff I need to get done. But about half of people say, I'd rather not. And I say, really, why don't you want to switch the order? And they say, I don't know. And I say, is there something special about the order? And they say, I just like to do it in that order. And when I do it in that order, it feels right and it feels good. And I feel ready to start the day. And if I do it in the other order, it feels, and they use words like weird or uncomfortable, words like that. And again, it's not people in robes, but you can see how if you're brushing your teeth and showering, those are actions, those are habits, those are good things to do. Like hygiene is good for us. But when you start thinking that the order of them matters and it gets imbued with more emotion, both I'm ready for the day or I'm uncomfortable that I can't do them, you can feel how those are more than just habits. They become emotional and meaningful. And that for me is when they start to move a little bit down the continuum toward ritual, where it isn't just the actions themselves. It's what those actions mean to us and how they make us feel.
In the, I can't remember if this was in the book or if it was in one of the articles that I read, but I loved this phrasing. I believe you said this or someone said this talking about your work. You said, habits are great, but they come in black and white, and rituals come in technicolor. And that helped me think through just that, like as you're describing, there's an emotional component and a tie. And we'll talk about a lot of the different categories of rituals that I really enjoy just thinking about. But that was helpful for me because yes, habits, when it feels very black and white, I want to do this, as you said, just to get the thing done. But then when we're talking ritual, there's maybe a more of an emotional component to it. I'll give you an example. And I think this is a ritual. So I've kind of dialed in my morning routine, which in the past, before reading your book, I probably would have thought these are my habits that I've dialed in. So I get up at 5, and this is just because I have just learned like I need to get a certain amount of stuff done in the morning.
Yeah.
And so I get up at 5, I get my cup of water, I walk downstairs to our basement. We have a finished basement. I weigh myself. I then make a cup of coffee. I take my vitamins and my supplements. I come back into the basement where there's like space right where I'm sitting right now, where I have my Bible and my journal and my pen, and I start my day by kind of praying and reading and journaling.
Yep.
And tell me, Mike, it seems like that's a ritual to me, because I will tell you, if I do it in a different order, or if I miss something on that list, there is kind of this like emotional component to it. And it's not super strong necessarily, but it is really important to me that I do that ritual and I feel more prepared for the day. I feel like I've kind of prioritize the things in the morning I want to do when I do that.
Yeah, I think it's closer to having something about it. Even as you talk about it, I can see that it provokes feeling in you more than just, yeah, I do this stuff in the morning. You know, I just need to get it done. Something like coffee is funny because technically people drink coffee to get some caffeine and wake up, but it's really much more psychological. With, you know, you have your favorite brand of coffee, you make it in a particular way, you drink it at a particular time. There's no reason for you not to have your coffee later, you know, after you journal. But no, I'm going to have mine before. But somebody else might have their coffee after they journal, and that becomes important to them. So the order varies. What's so interesting for me is the order of things and the steps vary so much from person to person. But when you have yours that gives you an emotional reaction or makes you feel, now I'm ready to get going, it's starting to become for you a little bit of this ritual feeling that I think is, it's just richer. It's technicolor is one of the words that we use. It kind of makes life more interesting and have more depth.
I just want to, I guess we're kind of going through this in my mind because it, people are familiar with habits. People have probably read and studied habits, and I want to just quickly distinguish rituals so that we're clear on the definition as we kind of dive into some of the more specific points of the book. I'm curious though, before we jump in, Mike, what are some of the rituals that have shown up in your life that maybe you already knew about? You've already talked about, you know, the sleep routine with your daughter, but I'm just curious, are there any rituals that you're now more aware of or that you've started now that you've done this work on rituals?
I realized, so I was doing some, one of the fun areas of research to study is the rituals of like celebrities and athletes, because they're very, very ritualist before you go on stage or before the game or before the match. If you watch tennis players before they serve, completely fascinating sequences of behaviors that they do exactly the same way every single time. Nadal has one of the most interesting like head swipes and stuff like this. He picks his wedgie literally every time before he serves. You know, he has these things that he does. So I'm studying these things and I'm thinking these people are, you know, they're not like us. They're they're under enormous pressure. Beyonce, Serena Williams, Rafael Nadal. So they do these kinds of behaviors, but I don't really, like, I'm not under stress. I don't really do anything. But my local, I'm not comparing myself to them in any way, but my local stress, for example, is if I have to teach a class, I've got to go in with 95 really, really smart people and not look like an idiot. can be pretty nerve-wracking. And I noticed after I was studying these famous people that I have my own little pre-teaching routine, and it really is very ritualistic. It's 30 minutes before I stand up and start walking around my office, rehearsing the class in my mind. I have a teaching plan so I can keep track of it. I write it down on yellow lined paper. I don't know why. I don't know when I started that, but it has to be yellow lined paper. And it's in a binder that my dad gave me like 25 years ago when I started being an academic. And I've always used that exact same binder for every single class I've taught. So it just, it suddenly dawned on me that if you looked at me, you know, from above, like a bird's eye view every day, you'd say, my God, that guy, he's doing the exact same, you know, I'd have slightly different clothes on, but it would be like a comedy reel of this guy doing the pacing back
yellow
and forth.
Yellow lined paper,
Exactly. And and there have been times when I can't find yellow paper. You know, you could use white paper to write on. I think we're aware of that. I just, you know, I can still teach, but it just feels
exactly. Something's wrong. There's an, like you said, there's an emotional, some level of an emotional response to that. That's really cool. Have you found, and not to jump too far down this road of performance rituals, but is there any indication that those who have rituals related to their performance do better when they perform these rituals, or they at least have rituals before performance?
Yeah, we do. So if you look at even how celebrities talk about their rituals and athletes talk about their rituals, they do say that it makes them feel ready to go. That if they can't do it, they're going to feel off in their game. They can still play. I can still teach, but they do give us this subjective feeling of, I'm ready to get out there and do that. And I think one of the things that people have shown that rituals, pre-performance rituals do for us is that in a way they just distract us from how anxious we are because they give us something else to do with our mind and with our body. And we do it regularly. So we get in this habit, this pattern, this ritual of doing the same thing every single time. And that helps us get out of our heads thinking, I'm going to fail. Helps us get a little bit more ready to go out and hopefully perform to our potential.
One of the things that I loved about rituals as I was doing your work and kind of, or looking at your work and preparing for this, is you talked about how rituals remind us to savor our experiences. Phrases like stop and smell the roses are directly contrary to trying to maximize our productivity every minute of our lives. Can you expound on that a little bit? Because that is something in our world of distraction and, you know, I've heard some folks talk about toxic productivity, where we just try to optimize every moment of every day. And I'm probably guilty of some of that. Talk about how rituals can help us slow down perhaps, or just be more present and smell the roses.
Yeah, I think the word optimize is a funny word because we often use it like with something like productivity or steps per day or something like that. But you can optimize on any dimension you feel like optimizing on. You can choose to optimize on happiness instead of productivity. But we like the things that we can kind of count. You know, I sent this many emails, I took this many steps. Rituals, I think, take us out of that world of counting and keeping track and trying to always improve on the specific metric. They allow us or remind us to do more than that. And I think a lot about a life of perfect habits. So imagine that you have all these goals to have all these habits and you always, always achieve them perfectly. All day, every day, you do the exact habits that you wanted to do. I think, I don't know, but I think 20 years later, you'd look back and say, that was a really boring, boring life, you know?
Yeah.
And your kids would say, hey, can we do this? And you'd say, no.
No.
Right now, what I have to do is steps. I can't do anything else. I need to do my step. You know, so you can think of habits as being rigid and limiting sometimes for us. I mean, again, we should all have good habits. I don't mean habits are bad. Of course, we should have good habits. But I think at a certain level, they start to make us automatons instead of humans. And rituals sometimes just remind us a little bit, even, you know, clinking glasses and saying cheers before we drink. We don't need to drink wine. We don't need to clink glasses. All we need is water to be hydrated. But we clink these glasses because they give us a little something extra, like connection with people. So we're not just consuming liquid at the appropriate amount, like the correct number of milliliters per day. We're consuming different liquids that taste differently. They give us different emotions that connect us with other people. These are the things I think that rituals can help us do. They can make toothbrushing and showering a little bit more emotional than just these boring things that we do. They can do it with wine. They can do it in other domains of life as well. So I think they do open us up beyond just having great habits to also having other experiences as well.
This was really helpful for me because I am one of those people who is trying to really dial in my habits. I mean, I mentioned kind of my morning routine and I have to be careful because to your point, it can become this like, well, where does life fit into that? And I think this kind of overlay of habits and rituals I found to be very helpful as I'm thinking through how do I create a life that is full and in alignment with my deepest values. And that's one of the things you talk about is this actually helps us live fully. And you talk about how it helps us bring other people into these moments, into these rituals. And I want to get you to talk a little bit more about that because I was thinking about some of our other rituals that I started to notice in my life. So my wife works from home. She's a remote worker. She works for a software company. And one of her rituals, every morning, she goes to a local coffee shop and she takes our son and she has a cup of coffee. And it's been amazing just, and we're a military family, so we move a lot, but everywhere we go, she tries to find a little local place where she can just go have a cup of coffee in the morning. And she makes friends and she connects with the people that work at that place. And it's just this, I mean, it can become expensive, but it's also this really nice way for her to get a relational connection. And I had never considered it a ritual. But now that I read your work, I started to appreciate that because like I said, it can be expensive. And sometimes I'm like, do you really need to go get another coffee today or, you know, a pastry? But now I'm like, oh my goodness, there's so much value in that. And it is a ritual that brings her together with other humans. And one of the things that you cite in your work that just blew my mind is the percentage of people who have New Year's Eve rituals, like specific rituals, and then how those that have rituals, I think you said it was about 40% of the people you surveyed have actual New Year's Eve traditions. And out of those people, 90% of them make it a point to actually gather on New Year's Eve. And I was like, oh my goodness, that is such a powerful thought that like if because so many of us have this desire to be with our families, to be with our friends, to create special moments. But if you're a family that doesn't maybe have some of these rituals, that maybe there's just less likelihood that people are going to feel some connected tissue beyond just the obvious relationship. So talk to us a little bit about some of the revelations from these studies about the relational connection to rituals.
Yeah. I mean, it's so interesting. Your wife's experience, because when we're getting to know people, we don't say, hey, we should really sit across from each other and talk sometime.
Yeah.
We say we should get a coffee sometime. We get a drink sometime.
Oh, that's so true. Yeah.
We use the little ritual of the coffee. You know, the server comes, brings the coffee. We have these things that we use in order to connect with other people. They help us get over the awkwardness of just saying, let's stare at each other for 30 minutes. Right. We're going to have a coffee, right?
Yeah,
and cultures all over the world, coffee and tea. Mm-hmm. You know, this isn't like a US thing. It's and through history, let's have a liquid so that we can actually have the conversation that we want to have. So even in these tiny ways, we use these little rituals to help us connect. And then, as you said, we use them in big ways as well. If you think about gathering with your family, once you've, you know, kids are older and they've moved out, what brings you all back together? Mm. It's basically the only rituals, weddings, sadly funerals, but then also holidays. Sometimes we ask people, you know, how close are you with your cousins or with your aunt or your uncle? Mm-hmm. And people say, yeah, you know, I feel pretty close to them. And we say, well, you know, how did you spend time with them when you were a kid? And they say, well, I really only saw them at weddings and funerals and holidays. Otherwise, I never would have seen my aunt and uncles or met my cousins.
Yeah.
So you can see how these rituals give us almost like an excuse to gather as a family and therefore be a family. Because otherwise, if we don't gather, we can send emails and stuff like that. But it's just very, very different. So I love the fact that rituals occur or exist in order to help us remember to gather together. You know, in the US with Thanksgiving, it's such a nightmare. You know, everybody's traveling, the traffic, the flight delays, all this kind of stuff. But if we don't have that, if we don't say that Thursday is a day that all of us get together, we won't do it.
Yeah.
Nobody says, let's get together the following Thursday, because people say, yeah, let's do that. And then they say, well, I'm busy. I have something to do. I can't come. We need these holidays sometimes to gather us so that we can have these traditions with our families.
Yeah. And it made me think, you know, I have two kids and obviously my hope is that as they get older and they have their own families, that there's some connectedness, some connected tissue. And it actually made me think, like, I really want us to not only create rituals now that we just, that are a way for us to relate to those special moments, but I would love for us to think deliberately about how we can create rituals that would endure beyond, you know, when they go beyond, just being in our house. And it's some of those I was thinking about, well, we, on Christmas Eve, we go to this particular restaurant that we enjoy. We put candy canes on the Christmas tree around Christmas time. And we tell our daughter, you can eat as many candy canes as you want. Maybe not the wisest choice, but it's just like something fun that we do. We go and pick out a Christmas tree. We put it up together while drinking hot chocolate. There's certain movies we watch. I was even thinking about as a kid, my grandmother, every Christmas Eve, we would go to her house for dinner, and then we would come back to her house for this like amazing Christmas breakfast. And then we would go to my aunt's for this Christmas dinner. And I remember when we moved away, my family moved away from South Carolina to North Carolina. And that was one of the hardest things. And I don't know that I appreciated it at the time, but like just kind of detaching from that special ritual that I had become so accustomed to. Anyway, your book just made me have all these like reflections about the power of ritual, and it made me want to create more rituals that allow us to have reasons to connect. So I guess my question, Mike, is that maybe one of the recommendations of the book? Like if people look at the power of relational rituals, is it appropriate for people to start thinking about like, hey, maybe I should create some rituals that allow my family to have more connected tissue?
For sure. I mean, I think, you know, if you think about the family rituals and traditions that you have yourself, we often see people taking things from the past, not taking everything from the past, but taking some things from the past. Literally, it's often food, like this specific pie.
Yeah, absolutely.
My great grandmother made, who I never even met, but then my grandmother made it. And then, you know, my dad made it. And now I'm going to make it myself. It's huge, right? I mean, how do we feel connected to previous generations? We can look at pictures of them and things like that, or we can do the same practices that they did. And now we have a sense of our family, not just, you know, the three of us in the house, but all the way back. And the sense that we'll be a family going forward, because your kids will make the same pie when they are older, and they're going to teach their kids how to do it. It doesn't have to be pie, obviously, but just this idea that we use these little rituals and practices for these huge, huge feelings in life. Are we a family? Do we have a history? Do we have a future together? the pie, it's not the only reason, but the pie helps us feel that way about each other. And I do think families can add rituals for little things, you know, we often do at dinner every night. What are you grateful for today?
Yeah.
And you can do that any night you want, but there's something different about doing it every night because it shows what you care about as a family. We don't say, what did you see that was funny today? Although we could do that, but that would say what we really value is funny. I hope we do.
Yeah.
We do gratitude, right? It's one of the things that I think we care a lot about and try to not just teach our kid about, but remind ourselves about. So these little tiny practices and rituals that you can start and keep doing them become a thing that has more meaning than just asking a couple of questions. It's kind of what we do and what we value as a family.
I love too the way you connected that ritual to one of your values, one of your family values, just knowing that like that we're going to create an action that's something we do on a regular basis that points back to something that I want us as a family to have as a principle of life. And like you said, this is just kind of what we do. It becomes just a way of living, especially for your kids. It's like, oh, that's what we do as a family. And then probably something that they're more likely to bring into their future adult life. Although one thought, Mike, that just had as I was kind of listening at rituals is I could also see where there might be a danger of rituals where, you know, you have the grandmother or the mom or the dad or whatever, who it's like, no, every single Christmas, we do it this exact way, or everyone has to travel and be here for this thing. And it almost becomes this rigid have to in order probably to get the same emotion that they've experienced in the past, this kind of nostalgia. You talk about nostalgia type rituals. Talk to us a little bit about that. Like, what is the line or what are the dangers of maybe rituals and how they can form over time?
Yeah, I think rigidity is always a concern with rituals. You know, one person demands it. That's the person that has perfect habits. You know, 20 years later, they say, why was I doing the perfect habits? But the other danger, I think it's funny, but also a danger, I think, that we see is, and people have this experience, like the first time you went to your significant other's house for a holiday instead of your own house, and your feeling was just that they're doing everything completely wrong.
Yeah, you know, right. Yes.
What kind of a family has ham? You know, whatever the thing, well, you know, you're not supposed to have ham. It's disgusting, even though you like ham just fine. You know, it smells wrong. It's the wrong timing, all this kind of stuff. And when people then get married, it's not conflict in the sense that usually you're angry, but you do have to sort out, what are we going to bring from your family? What are we going to bring from my family? And then, like you're doing, what are we also going to come up with ourselves? And there is often a clashing of, no, this is really, really important to me. And then the other person has to kind of accommodate that. So we do see, and you can think about interfaith marriages as well, where you have religious differences also. We do have to navigate our family rituals when we're changing our family structure to include new people. Luckily, usually people pull it off and come up with their own distinctive thing for their family. But it does show they can be kind of stressful because we care so much about them. We're not willing to just say, yeah, whatever, I don't care what kind of pie.
So this is a leadership podcast. You teach at the Harvard Business School. And so I'd like to talk a little bit about how rituals might be useful for leaders and how maybe they show up in the workplace. You already talked a little bit about performance and how that's maybe a powerful tool to think about. When you were talking about that, it made me think about my time as a prosecutor. I would go into the courtroom the day before when no one was there, normally late at night or early in the morning the day, and I would give my closing argument to an empty jury box. But that was a critical ritual for me to feel prepared when the next day I'm actually giving the same closing argument to actual jury members. And then I would do it in my car to and from work. I would rehearse my opening or my closing. So it obviously could be a helpful tool for individual performance and team performance. But what are some other ways that rituals might show up at work or how leaders could use them to create the type of culture that they want to create?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because when we see like Nadal and Serena Williams and these very famous people doing their rituals, they do them publicly. You know, they do the swiping and the stuff,
right.
It is that they do. And we just let them do it because they're amazing. But when we do them ourselves, we we don't do them publicly. We hide them. Like my teaching ritual, I don't do it out in the hallway. I close the door and I pace around like a maniac myself, right? And so one of the most common things that people do, and it's so funny, is they go into the bathroom and look in the mirror and talk to themselves.
Yeah.
It's actually extremely common. If you ask people, you know, what do you do before a big meeting? You've got a, you know, big presentation, big client meeting, got to give closing arguments, whatever it might be.
Yeah.
People do all kinds of different things. But one of them is they sneak into the bathroom. They make sure nobody's there. And then they yell at themselves in the mirror. You know, you can do this. You got this. You know, it's like, who are you talking to? You know, you're yelling at yourself in the mirror that you can do this. You know, it's a very, if you really think about it, it's a very funny thing that we do as humans. And yet, again, when people do it, just like in your experience as well, you feel you're practicing a little bit in your case, and practice is good, but you're also creating this feeling of, I can, you yelled at yourself, you can do this, and you kind of feel a little bit more, yeah, maybe I can do this.
Yeah.
And you can go out of the bathroom into the boardroom and leave the meeting, you know, that was stressing you out.
I'm glad to know I'm not the only one that does that. It's good that your research showed that people go to the bathroom or go somewhere to get their mind right. And it makes total sense to me. I was actually, sorry to keep mentioning all these rituals, but one of the things that I've done in the Army is airborne operations. So we jump out of airplanes, and I was just thinking through what a ritual that is, where, you know, you show up the day before, they check your parachute or kind of check, not your parachute, but they check to make sure you have all the right equipment. And then you show up on the day of, and you know, you immediately get your parachute, they check your parachute, and then you wait in line. And then when you actually get on the plane, there's a step-by-step process for what you do before you jump out of the airplane. And then when you jump out of the airplane, there's a step-by-step process for what you do to prepare to land and then to land and then after you land. But I can see how these types of rituals could be helpful for leaders to think through. Because it seems like am I wrong in that this is a way that cultures are created on teams, for example? Like if you're trying to lead a team of people, rituals seem like something that either probably already exist or something you could use to create, to maybe create the type of team or culture that you want to see show up in your workplace.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. Your story reminded me of one of my favorite rituals that we ever encountered was, so Russian cosmonauts for years and years and years before they would, you know, I'm not sure what's more stressful than launching yourself into space. It feels like a pretty stressful activity to me. So, you know, high jumping out of a plane seems pretty stressful to me also. So what space. They would do is they would get on this bus, you know, to drive to the rocket or whatever they were going to get on. And the bus would pull over and everyone would get out and everyone would go pee on the left tire.
Oh, my goodness.
And it's like, what the?
Yeah.
Why would an astronaut pee on a left tire?
That's not what I expected you to say.
Okay. Not at all, right? That's like not the thing that you would think the astronaut or anybody would be doing. But it's because the first cosmonaut, I don't know if I'm saying Yuri Gagarin, had to pee on his way to the first launch. Mm. So he got out of the bus and peed over by the back left tire and then got on and the flight went fine. So literally that ridiculous thing became something, let's all make sure that we pee before we get on the rocket to make sure that it's going to go well. It's like a funny, it's a odd example of a culture that develops, but you know, 50 years later, he's not there anymore. But when you get out and pee on the tire, you're still connected to this long history and legacy of this really important thing in your life. And I think it does probably make you feel like, you know what, maybe this trip's going to go okay as well.
That's really cool. And I think you could expand that to so many rituals that teams have or that leaders can create, where maybe once a quarter you do an offsite and that's just what we do as part of this team, or, you know, you have certain ways to celebrate accomplishments. So I would just encourage leaders to really think about the power of rituals and the emotions that creates on your team and how you can tap into not just your history, but how you can kind of create a future culture that aligns with your values. Well, Mike, I know we have run out of time. I'm just so grateful for this work and excited to see it go out into the world and see the reaction. I know it's going to be really positive. In like our last 30 seconds, just tell people where to connect with you and where to follow the work that you're doing.
If you're interested in figuring out if you're already doing rituals or not, we have a ritual quiz that you can take where you can see different domains of life, if you're already there or not. And that helps you reflect on whether you need more or whether you have the right amount now, just look up Michael Norton Ritual Quiz and the quiz will pop up. It's a great way to start to engage with some of the ideas. And it's also funny then to share your results with your spouse or with your kids, because they'll, if you don't see it, they'll see it in you.
So cool. Well, thanks for writing the book, Michael. And thanks for your previous work too about money and how it can buy happiness. A wonderful TED Talk. It's got over 4 million views. Check that out. So Michael, thanks so much for your time. Really appreciate it, brother.
Thank you, Cal.
Well, thank you, friend, for tuning in today and listening to my conversation with Dr. Michael Norton. I really appreciate you hanging around till the end. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope it helped you. I just want to ask you a question. What rituals might you create in your family or on your team that might help reinforce a culture that you want to have? Or maybe it's for your family. Maybe you want to create a ritual that will allow and create an opportunity for you to get together with your family or your friends in the future. Think about that. It's just a challenge for you to begin to immediately apply some of what Dr. Norton was talking about. I know I have been thinking about what are some rituals that I want to continue to have in my family. I mentioned several of those on the podcast today. Or what are some rituals that I want to create for my family to just create special moments that might help us have just another excuse to get together in the future. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. I hope you go and have a wonderful week. Remember that life is short. Let's go make it count.